What's up, Beardos? You're listening to episode 3 of the Bearded Vegan Starter Guide.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't answer the question first time. Not answering the question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. And you can reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we continue our Bearded Vegan Starter Guide with a look back on episode 101, Why Misanthropy is Bad for Veganism.
Paul, I'm excited to bring this one back because this is an issue that I have become passionate about. One that I used to be very much on the other side of the fence. I used to be, I think, a very proud misanthrope, and I thought that that was a productive view and a good way to navigate the world and to be a vegan activist. And I have done a complete 180 on that, and we have a conversation about that in this episode.
This was a great episode, Andy. I, too, enjoyed re-listening to this one earlier today. And so again, what we're doing here, this is the Bearded Vegan Starter Guide. We're kind of bringing back the episodes that we feel most exemplify our podcast. And so we've already brought back 2 episodes, and now this episode is kind of talking about it's kind of like, what are the vegans talking about with each other? It's things that I feel like conversations that non-vegans probably would not be having. Is that fair to say?
I think so, unless perhaps they're confronted with a vegan activist on Facebook or something like that that's really decrying human rights or something like that. But I think that's often our sweet spot on this podcast is, you know, we're not here to say, where do you get your protein from? We're really more interested in talking. I used to think, you know, vegan to vegan type thing, but we've learned that a lot of people listen to this podcast, or at least a decent amount, that are vegetarian or just curious about veganism, and they're looking for an insight into the ethical vegan mindset. And so I think that this episode would certainly give people an insight into, you know, what kind of conversations might vegans be having behind closed doors or something like that. And it's, you know, it's exemplary of an episode that, I don't know if I'm using that word at all. You know, it sort of is an example of the type of episode where we talk about what's going on in the vegan community, as well as what's just sort of like a common attitude that you seem to come across in veganism. And we dissect that. And Paul, this episode, I think, is notable because we often phrase our episodes as, is this bad for veganism? And this one we said, you know what? We have a clear point of view on this one, and we are going to come out with a title that said, why this is bad for veganism, which is I think that's a rare thing for us to take an incredibly firm stance on something.
Yeah, I think, and I hope this comes through in the episode, but I do feel like we are both very passionate about this issue. And I think, you know, when we're coming up with the titles and we're like, oh, let's make this clickbaity title so that people don't really know what we're talking about. But I think we were like, no, this is too serious of an issue that we believe like there's going to be no kind of question about where we fall on this.
Absolutely. So if you enjoy this episode, we do have some other recommendations for you, and you can find all of those recommendations and this episode in a Spotify playlist that we have composed for you by going to thebeardedvegans.com/start here. But to give you a couple of recommendations right off the bat, we think that if you enjoyed this type of conversation, you would also enjoy or get something out of episode 119, which was our collaboration with Callie and Nicole of Vegan Warrior Princesses Attack, all about Time's Up AR.
And Andy, like 2 weeks ago, we talked about, you know, research heavy episodes. That Time's Up AR, I think Andy put in more GD work into that episode. That was a long one too, and it needed to be long. We were talking about important stuff, and Andy did a lot of great work on that episode. That's one of the episodes that I think I would suggest people going back to listen to. In addition to that one, episode 145, Why Tone Policing Needs to Die in a Goddamn Dumpster Fire.
Speaking of clickbait titles.
I like how I said GD to censor myself a minute ago, and then in that title episode, uncensored.
I thought you said GD stands for like good dog.
Additionally, episode 126, Will Veganism Solve Gun Violence? Which I feel like that topic relates a little bit to what we were talking about in this misanthropy episode as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. This is another one where we look at a specific attitude in veganism that I find to be very unfortunate and also very short-sighted and does a lot of disservice to a lot of very important issues that are happening. And then the final one that I would recommend is also a relatively recent one, which was The Disruption of Kamala Harris, which gets into a lot of these types of issues as well. So again, you can find all of those in our playlist over at thebeardvegans.com/start here, or you can just scroll down and find them in your podcast feed.
And that was episode 186.
Didn't I say that?
Nope.
All right.
And with that being said, enjoy this trip down memory lane, why misanthropy is bad for veganism.
These are themes we've certainly touched on in the past, especially with sort of the mindsets of certain high profile activists that we've talked about. Unfortunately, our window into this is the incredibly unfortunate and horrific act of terrorism that happened in Las Vegas the other weekend, where 59 people were killed and hundreds more were injured by a gunman shooting down on a crowd at a concert. And I mean, obviously, before we even get into this conversation, our heart goes out to all the victims. And it's, you know, as someone who has been touched by gun violence in the past, it's an immense tragedy. And I just know how much pain and hurt these people are going to be going through for the rest of their lives. So definitely our condolences to the victims. And again, our hearts do go out to them. There's been an interesting response to this in the vegan community. And there was one food truck owner who found themselves really at the epicenter of this. And I think that this incident is sort of symptomatic of larger attitudes within the animal rights circles. But Paul, do you want to break down what this incident was for us?
Sure. So we're going to use an article from WSVN.com, and it's titled "Vegan Food Truck Owner Apologizes After Post About Las Vegas Meat Eaters Sparks Intense Backlash." Delinda Jensen, 60 years old, of Wilkes Bar, said she's received death threats and had to shut down her business after her post Monday night started going viral, sparking intense backlash both online and off. Jensen wrote, "Yes, I am jaded. 59 meat eaters dead. How many animals will live because of this?" In a second comment, she used an expletive to say she didn't care about, quote, carnists. Jensen, a former adjunct history professor, called her post a moment of stupidity and apologized for it in an interview with the Times Leader newspaper in Wilkes-Barre. Was it poorly written? Absolutely. Do I regret it? Yes. I am so sorry I wrote that, she said Thursday. Meat eaters or not, no one deserves to die like that. I wasn't celebrating the death of these people.
Sounds like she was celebrating the death of those people.
Yeah. Yeah. And not that this, like, I don't know. I think this is a different topic to have, a different conversations to have another time. But it's like, she's six, and it doesn't matter. It does not matter how long someone's been vegan, and it doesn't matter, like, that shouldn't matter. There's no, like, oh, I'm more vegan than you are. There's nothing like that. But she's 60 years old, and she's been vegan. The article says she's been vegan for 2 years. It's like she was in the boat of everyone else for the last 58 years of her life. And it's unfortunate to me that she couldn't have more like empathy and sympathy for other people who she has spent, you know, approximately 97% of her life being, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Paul. I mean, I guess I kind of did want to, because originally we had this slated to just be like a news story before this apology came out, and then the apology happened and we're like, all right, let's talk about this. And I did want to just sort of talk about this notion of, you know, like one meat eater dead saves how many animals. and it just feels like a really unproductive sentiment. And like, I get it. I feel like I'm gonna be saying this a lot throughout this discussion. I totally get it. I think all of us listening can probably empathize with feeling disgust at humanity or feeling hatred for the things that as humans we collectively commit. And I totally get that. And I don't think that there's not room for us to vent those things.
So I think how we wanted to have this discussion is surrounding the idea of misanthropy in the vegan movement, because I do see this popping up from time to time, and I'm always so bummed out when I see this. And Andy, if people are not familiar with misanthropy, what is misanthropy?
Well, according to Wikipedia, who would never lie to us, misanthropy is the general hatred, dislike, distrust, or contempt of the human species or human nature. It's pretty simple. It's basically a hatred of man, a profound hatred of man, if you will.
and if we need a Andy, do we need a sound clip of what this sounds like in the vegan community sometimes?
I think that we could go with a sound clip.
But I want to clarify something essential. I'm a misanthrope, not a racist. I hate all human beings, Palestinians and Israelis. All humans are a psychotic scourge to this planet. Whites, blacks, men, women, heterosexuals, homosexuals, Republicans, Democrats. Shit, I even hate vegans. But I remain a vegan activist because vegans cause the least amount of harm to the animals and the entire planet.
You know, I kind of was hoping we'd never hear his voice again, Paul.
I know. And I apologize. I just took him out of retirement to play that sound clip, Andy.
You just called him right up. So yeah, I mean, I think that at the heart of this comment made about the Vegas shooting is this widespread misanthropy that is within the vegan movement. And I certainly am someone who is guilty. I used to say all the time, humanity is a plague. And, you know, you say it when like traffic sucks, you know, like at the smallest thing. But I think that it's generally like a really unproductive way of thinking about the world and about veganism. But I feel like when we have this hatred of humanity, it allows us to view the death of humans as like a net win for the animals, and it's incredibly insensitive to those that are going through really intense trauma. Like if someone came up to me after my best friend was shot and killed and was like, just think about how many animals that person is now saving because they're dead, I'd be like, fuck off, you know? Like it's I think it's just a horrible way to navigate through life, aside from being incredibly insensitive. You know, like you were pointing out, Paul, most of us were not born vegan, and most of us were guilty of all the things that we hate people for doing up until the last year, 10 years, whatever it might be. And we have to kind of think, like, would we be deserving of this scorn previously to awakening to all these issues? Some people might say yes. Some people might say yes, but how is that going to help people to get on the right side of history if that's how we treat them?
Yeah. And I think there's this other issue where, as in the clip that we just heard, I think a lot of times people deflect accusations of racism or sexism or homophobia or transphobia or anything like that. People deflect those accusations by just saying, oh no, I don't like anybody. Like, I don't like humans in general. And it's like completely taking the blame off of any, it's like taking yourself out of any sort of accountability. And it's just saying like, oh, nothing I do can be, I can't be held accountable for anything I do because I'm just being shitty to everyone, which is usually not the case anyways. Usually the things that people are being called out for are specific forms of oppression that they then deflect off by saying, no, this is how I treat everybody. But a lot of times I feel like that's not the case.
I agree. I definitely find that the like, I'm just a misanthrope, I'm not racist, like the excuse that hating everyone equally just means that like you don't have prejudice within you other than the hatred of humans, but somehow it always takes the form of worse hatred towards people of color, towards women, towards marginalized communities. And so it just, again, it just seems like a mask for racism, a mask for sexism and transphobia and all of those things.
Yeah, and it especially, you know, peeves me off when it is coming from like a white male, a white guy that's saying these things, that's saying like, oh, I hate everyone equally, because to me it's just so ignorant of like the privileges that they are being afforded, like, and the oppression of other people. It's just so ignorant of it, and it's coming from such this position of privilege, and it doesn't affect them in the slightest by saying, oh, I hate everybody, so I'm just going to be shitty to everybody. There's no consequence to them for being shitty to everybody, because things are going to keep being shitty for oppressed people, but they're not going to be oppressed, so it doesn't matter to them if they help those people or not. It's very selfish.
Yeah, I think you really hit the nail on the head there, Paul. I think that I'm sure there are exceptions to this rule, but pretty much across the board, the people that I do see espousing these views are typically white folks, and especially white men. And yeah, they're not going to lose anything. And you know, essentially, these people are saying, like, don't bring this issue into veganism. But the only people that have the privilege of not bringing that issue into veganism are the ones that don't deal with it in their daily life. And so it's like, for a lot of people, that issue it's not a choice whether to bring it in or not. That's their existence. That's their daily mm-hmm. experience, you know, and to ask someone to kind of separate those things out and to condemn their fellow, you know, people that are also dealing with that specific issue because they are maybe not on board with veganism, it seems really short-sighted. It seems like a really good way to maintain veganism as like a very privileged, gated community.
Yeah, and it kills me. It kills me, Andy, when the people that are espousing these views are the ones that are getting all of the, you know, like all of the attention on social media or just at conferences or whatever. And it kills me because it's just like this breeding ground of hate. And it just seems so counterproductive and so counterintuitive for what the vegan movement should be like. And like you said before, Andy, there are places, you know, there's a place for venting, but like the stuff that I see, it's just like it's hatred. It's not venting. It's just like actual bigotry and hatred. And I just kind of prepare for this episode, I went to the Facebook page of it pains me to say this, semi-popular vegan activist who does like vocally express these views, vocally expresses not ever wanting to go to fight for any other social justice issue besides veganism, who expresses ideas of being like anti-PC or saying things like, you know, like you you know we're too sensitive about things. And I was just reading through like the comments, not what this person said, but the comments, it's just like, it hurts me so much that it's almost like this person is providing a gathering space for these sorts of ideas. And they're just going to keep kind of stewing and building on each other. And I'm not going to read any of the comments because they're terrible, but it's extremely misogynistic. It's extremely like anti being able to be critical of other vegans. So any sort of talk against like, hey, maybe you shouldn't say those things is kind of met with, well, like this person is doing so much for animals and we don't need to care about that other stuff. And it's just, it's like horrible, horrible stuff. And it pains me because this is not, I mean, I can't say this definitively, but I'm going to anyways, Andy. Like, this is not the thing that's going to make new vegans. It's like if a non-vegan goes and sees these things, it's like, wow, these people are talking about me. They're talking about someone like me. They're going to be so turned off by veganism. It would be incredible to me if they ever became vegan after reading some of these terrible, horrible comments about how people need to be stabbed in the head with forks and skinned alive and boiled alive and stuff like that. It's like, why is this a movement that I would ever want to join if I had no interest already in really joining it? It's just going to turn me off even further. So it really breaks my heart.
Yeah, and I know that the counter to that is, well, veganism is an issue of fundamental justice for animals, and everyone needs to be vegan regardless of how crappy vegans are towards non-vegans or even each other. I agree with that on some level. That's like, people need to be vegan no matter what, but also, like, you know, we're a movement of allies for animals. Like, it's not about us. And I think that we need to conduct ourselves in a way that is going to be the most inclusive and welcoming in to new people that are curious about the whole thing. And that means not harboring these views at all. Like, not just not saying them, like, not harboring these views. I think that, you know, internalizing this hatred of our fellow human beings really makes it hard for us to influence them. You know, obviously someone could make a really hateful blog post and maybe someone reads that and like, oh, this person is right. We are a plague on this earth and everything's horrible and I should go vegan. But I think generally speaking, over our last 100 episodes, Paul, we've learned so much about how in order to influence someone or to help guide them to make better choices, you have to have empathy for them and their situation. And it feels like these types of attitudes, this type of contempt and just seething hatred of others is really counter to showing empathy for someone in their situation. And it's like, how do you expect to connect with someone and influence them if you hate them and they know that you hate them? It feels like it's taking many steps backwards.
And I know it's like we've said this before, but even if you don't believe any of this stuff that we're spouting out, you are probably someone that still wants as many people as possible to be vegan. And like we've just been saying, you are not going to create vegans if you are specifically attacking groups of people or you're attacking people for holding specific sorts of opinions. So, like, even if you are just a total dillweed and you like legitimately hate certain types of people, it's like you should still be trying to get those people vegan if you truly want what's best for the animals. And I totally, like Andy and I were both saying before, it's like we get being upset about these things. We can empathize how upset people are and being really upset and being angry at how things are in the world. But because, like you just said, Andy, because we are a community of allies, like it's our duty to do what is most effective as possible. And even though it feels great to be angry about something and then have a specific target at that anger and unleash that anger on that target, I'm sure that feels phenomenal. It's really like it's just very self-gratifying, and it's not, I would believe, to be super effective. It's going to feel great, but it's not going to do great things.
Yeah, that certainly goes back to the listener question we answered earlier, that like some things are, they might feel good. It might feel good to yell at someone and get your aggression out, but it's not just going to be neutral. It's going to hurt the cause in general.
Yeah, and I do think it's important to find ways to get your anger and aggression out. Just find either constructive ways, if you can somehow form them into a constructive way, or just like do something else to get that aggression out that isn't related to this, because it's, you know, it's, we put so much, this also kills me, Andy. We put so much emphasis on being, as a movement as a whole, we put so much emphasis on being like the loudest and the most aggressive vegan and who can yell the loudest and who can be the angriest. And I think that that's such, it's so unfortunate that that's kind of the standard for what a good vegan advocate looks like, because I think what ends up happening is a lot of very problematic people get put to the forefront, and it's like, oh, you made this terribly angry, terribly vocal, terribly aggressive person to become like a vegan celebrity, and then they go and do something shitty. Who could have seen that coming if you gave someone that had that has a lot of anger a powerful position?
Yeah.
So I really want to change that that standard that this is what you need to be if you want to be a good advocate. And I think there are, unfortunately, there are groups out there that are kind of capitalizing on people who feel angry and don't know what the outlet is. They're upset and they don't know how to get that out. And there are groups that capitalize on that emotion and they say, here's this thing that is going to feel really, really good for you. And you're going to be doing so much for the animals if you do this, if you go out and yell at people at Chipotle. And it's just like it. I get why that feels good, but we need to be better as a whole vegan community, and we need to learn that there are other ways of venting our aggressions, or there are more constructive ways to kind of funnel our aggressions that are actually going to be more effective.
Now, Paul, what about people who say that having this kind of attitude and view of humanity is just being realistic and just sort of being very practical because, you know, significantly more animals are killed than humans are killed?
Well, again, if that's how you really want to go, then I would ask you, how are we going to save the most amount of animals? And the answer to how we're going to save the most amount of animals is to get more vegans. And how are we going to get more vegans? It's not by assaulting people on the streets that are just going about their business, you know?
Yeah, it's certainly not by celebrating the unfortunate death of people. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's like a disconnect between what's going to be effective and what feels effective.
Yeah, I think that for a lot of people, myself included, it takes us a while to realize that there's a difference between those two things.
You know, we've kind of alluded to certain people or certain groups that hold these sorts of views. But I don't know, maybe you're still thinking that this isn't a rampant opinion in the vegan community. But Andy, you have shared with me, unfortunately, I'm so upset about this. You have shared with me a kind of, what would you call this, a credo?
Some might call it a declaration.
A declaration that kind of takes these views that some people hold that we've been talking about and kind of puts them out declaration style for people to, you know, sign underneath here if you agree with these views.
Yeah. So this is the Non-Humans Declaration from Non-Humans First. And I guess the name kind of says it all, but we're going to read some of this. We're going to paraphrase some of this and then talk about it a little bit. So I feel like this is kind of the ultimate culmination of the misanthropy that happens within the vegan movement. Some people would defend this and say it's not a result of misanthropy and that it is not representative of that, but we can talk about that too. So it begins with a little preamble. Whereas non-human animals are being oppressed and murdered by over 99% of the human population, and these humans refuse to denounce human privilege. Whereas non-human animals are in a situation of immediate emergency and global holocaust with no human crises even coming close to its scale. Whereas we recognize our role as animal rights activists as being to directly advocate for non-human animals, giving their interest a voice, as they have none in society, in human society, rather than to represent our own ideologies and interests. We seek to work under the following voluntary principles. 1. No one should be excluded from participating in animal rights activities based on their views on human issues. Then goes on to say, the women's rights, anti-racism, etc. movements have no requirements that participants reject species oppression, nor should the animal movement demand the adherence to human rights positions while animals are still in a state of emergency. And then they do close that one out by saying every situation has exceptions to the rule. The next point is 2. Tactics should prioritize non-human animals given their emergency situation and the fact non-human animals are being oppressed by the majority of humans. No tactical idea should be excluded from the discussion based on its conflict with human rights ideology. And 3. We are aware and concerned about the fact that some human rights improvements within a fundamental oppressive system towards non-humans leads to increased oppression of non-human animals. For example, economic improvements leading to increases in factory farming, meat consumption, animal labs, etc. We therefore call on human beings to free their own non-human slaves before demanding their own rights. So maybe we could just kind of go through these point by point and talk about how we feel about them, Paul.
Terrible, terrible, terrible. There we go, Andy. Just went through all three.
So, number one, no one should be excluded from participating in animal rights activities based on their views on human issues. What say you on that?
So, I know you just want to talk about this one, but it seems like saying that goes against like what everything else is, what like the other points that they've been making. It's like, hey, everyone can participate in this thing, but if you need help participating in this thing, or if you have some other issues, we're totally not going to let you participate in this thing, or we're not going to help you to participate in this thing. It kind of seems to go against. It seems contradictory to me. And I know what they are talking about is no one should be excluded, so real shitty people shouldn't be excluded. Like, that's why they're including that. Like, racists and other forms of bigotry, those people should not be excluded. But to me, I'm reading it as, like, oh, hey, no one should be excluded. So if I want this oppressed group to also participate in animal rights activities, but if they ask for anything that will help them to maybe participate in these activities later on, it says like, we're not going to help those people out. So it seems contradictory.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I had not thought of it that way, but essentially this idea of no matter how oppressed you are, how dare you fight for your own oppression until animals are free kind of idea.
Yeah.
And they do say at the bottom, we should throw this in while we're talking about it. We recognize that individual situations require different responses. These are not rules or policies. Nothing is set in stone. These are just generalized, flexible principles. Also, we do not seek to define others' participation within animal rights. These are our principles. We do not seek to force them on others, and we expect others not to force us to conform to their beliefs. The declaration is totally voluntary, and we respect opposing views, providing they are not used to exclude people from participation in animal rights activities. Part of this is kind of like the question would be to bring it to its extreme is, would you accept a vegan Nazi? If someone was a Nazi, but they wanted to fight for animal rights, do you think they have a place within the movement? It almost feels like that's sort of like the question that one might ask. I know that's like kind of hyperbolic, but, you know, and this is more like, well, this person doesn't think Thug Kitchen is racist, so should they be excluded from animal rights activities because of that? But it almost seems like, I guess we want the world to be vegan. That means there's going to be shitty people that are vegan. But I guess strategically speaking, I'm thinking, why do we need to cater to the shittiest of people first? Why do we need to prioritize them over all these other people instead?
Yeah, because I feel like if we can get the not shitty people to all go vegan, then we would both be pressuring the shitty people both to be vegan and to be not shitty.
And I know we're using so many judgment words right now, and this is totally counter to our nonviolent communication love, but I feel like that is probably the simplest way to put these things right now. You think about, does including a, again, hyperbolic, but does including a vegan Nazi, is that going to prevent a lot of other groups from wanting to be a part of your animal rights cause? I would say yes.
Yeah.
Whereas, yes, say, one oppressed group, whatever it might be, coming into the fold is not going to prevent, you know, a number of other groups from participating. Maybe they'll exclude the one Nazi from coming in, but it seems like it's, strategically speaking, it's really a bad idea to welcome in the people that are going to be the most alienating towards other groups.
Yeah. And I feel like even though the way that this is worded is trying to present itself as being all inclusive, what it's really doing is it's saying, oh, we can include people from this one extreme, so like going towards the Nazi, but if the people from the other extreme say anything, they would use this argument to say, oh, well, now you're trying to exclude those other people. And so, I don't know, it just seems to me it's like one of those things that I feel like happens a lot in, you know, in non-vegan circles as well, where it's like, it's this policy that is on its superficial level, it's supposed to be all inclusive, but what it's actually doing is, you know, permitting the far right and then excluding the far left type of situation.
Interesting, Paul. So let's move on to the second one. Tactics should prioritize non-human animals. No tactical idea should be excluded from the discussion based on its conflict with human rights ideology. This feels like it was written about someone that was like, hey, PETA does some really shitty stuff, and therefore we should stop giving them attention. I guess when I read that, I'm just like, I feel like tactics that directly conflict with human rights ideologies, I'm trying to think of a tactic that conflicts with human rights ideologies that is also good for animals, like, ultimately. Like, it's kind of this idea that, like, as long as it's about the animals, it's good. But I feel like if it conflicts with human rights, how is that going to be good for animals?
It's not. No, yeah. It's kind of like this scares me, Andy. These three declarations, they scare me, because the idea, like, saying like nothing is off limits is such like a scary thing to say. It's such a scary view to have.
But animals are in a state of emergency, Paul.
But is it like, I don't know. It's just like, no tactic is off limits. So can I go around just beating up non-vegans?
I mean, I think this is kind of the, not that the Vegas shooting was a tactic for taking out meat eaters, but that the comments that were made about it were like, this is a good thing. And it does make me go, is someone going to see this? And I don't know if this is like a slippery slope argument, but it does make me think, if there are enough people that are like, it's good when humans die because it saves animals, does this lead to someone that takes this into their own hands and is like, yeah, I should start killing people because that's going to help the most animals?
Yeah. I mean, that's, I feel like that's what this list condones.
Yeah. And then is that the next thing? You know, if we think that, like, the, you know, what PETA and like DXC do for the image of veganism. And again, I don't think that our image is the be all end all of veganism. Of course, I think there's things we can do that help animals that maybe the general public doesn't love. But if we think it's hard to defend people yelling at someone in Whole Foods, like, how hard is it going to be to defend someone that decided they should kill people in the name of animal rights?
Yeah.
And certainly the government, with their horrible crackdown on activism, especially people doing like undercover investigations and other types of direct action, certainly that could really be the thing that they need to like really crack down on veganism.
Yeah.
And vegan advocates and animal rights, even worse than it already is.
Yeah. No, you're right. I didn't think about that.
All right, point number three. This one, I guess, is also probably the scariest to me. We are aware and concerned about the fact that some human rights improvements within a fundamentally oppressive system towards non-humans leads to increased oppression of non-human animals. For example, economic improvements leading to factory farming, meat consumption, etc. I feel like I know nothing about who wrote this or the people that wrote this. I would guess that they're not people. They're people in a relatively privileged position. Could be totally wrong on this. I could be totally wrong on this, but it's kind of weird to be like, assuming someone wrote this is like from the USA, right? I don't know if that's the case, but if they did, and they're like, people in like developing nations shouldn't continue to develop and have a better quality of life because of these things, but they're not asking themselves to give up their quality of life. They're content to be in, you know, an area that's relatively privileged. It seems like that, again, is that's kind of like the racism being masked by misanthropy or the guise of, well, it's effective activism because we don't want better quality of life for people because that means that more animals will be killed. But it could also mean that better quality of life gives people more time to advocate for animals.
Yeah.
You know, we know that it's harder to advocate for others when you are advocating for yourself all the time.
Who is going to agree with this? That's that's not in a privileged position.
I don't know, Paul. I'm sure there are some, but it feels like this is kind of the thing that's catered to people that have a lot of their rights already.
Yeah. And who is this going to attract except for people that are not in a privileged position?
Yeah. I mean, and what type of activism is this going to foster and breed? To me, it feels like it's going to continue to foster activism that is really counterproductive, like following people in the streets and yelling at them for wearing fur.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I feel like the idea that in this point, number three, the idea that they acknowledge that there are these other issues and then they like downright say, no, we don't care about them, is even worse than denying that there are those other forms of oppression. Because there are people that will just say, no, like people aren't oppressed. Everyone's just being liberal snowflakes. And like there are people who will deny that these things exist. But this number 43, it's acknowledging these things. There are human like there's a need for human rights improvements. But we're going to say, no, fuck you. You're not going to get those things until all the animals are freed.
Yeah. And final...
that's like. That's even more insulting than I think being ignorant to the fact that these issues exist.
Yeah, the line, we therefore call on human beings to free their own non-human slaves before demanding their own rights. It's hard to imagine who that messaging is attractive to. And, you know, I know that some people say, well, that's what the Reducitarians are doing, is like they're saying you have to water down your message to reach people. I think we can reach people with a pretty strong animal rights message that doesn't say the thing that makes your life miserable daily, the systemic oppression that you face, is nothing compared to animals. So therefore, unless you start to care about animals, you shouldn't care about the other things that you face, you know, and even once you've gone vegan, how dare you advocate for your own rights, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The whole thing is just, it's just a bummer to me.
Yeah. It's scary. It's upsetting. And at the bottom, they had like people who have signed this declaration, and there was a handful of organizations there.
Yeah. Yeah. 269 being chief among them. I know that is a number that a lot of people just like will get tattooed on them because they're like, oh, this is vaguely associated with veganism. And, you know, a lot of people don't really realize like where a lot of these things go back to. So, yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just really kind of frightening to me personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As two people that like aren't even would not be affected necessarily by the actions of other people who are kind of following these tenets.
Yeah.
It's very frightening.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we've definitely said this in the show many times before. If you sort of look at the world and you go, animals have it worse than everyone else, and therefore I'm going to work for animals. If that's your assessment of the situation, I think that's fine. I think that, but it's still important. But I think it's still important that we make sure that the activism we do doesn't step on the necks of other social justice movements, of other marginalized groups. It's not like people are saying you have to be at every protest for every cause ever, and you have to devote every waking second to a myriad of issues and all of these things. Like, I think that we work best when we focus on a smaller number of issues. But I think that, you know, we can incorporate into our daily learning these other issues that are going on and make sure that we're not stepping on those people's toes while we're working for animals as well.
Well put, Andy. When you suggested that we talk about this, I was already fired up about this exact issue. So I've got a lot of opinions on this one, Andy. Out of a lot of the vegan issues that we talk about, this is something that I think I feel most passionately about. One of the things that I feel most passionately about.
Do you have other opinions you feel like you didn't get out?
No, I don't think. I think I got most of them out. Cool. Thank you for providing me that outlet.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you had a place to vent, Paul. And we, of course, want to know what all y'all out there, all you beautiful beardos, think of this. So send us an email, thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. All right, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that. A look back on episode 101, Why Misanthropy is Bad for Veganism. Again, if you enjoyed that conversation, that type of topic, that type of dissecting of that sort of issue, we would recommend that you go back and listen to episode 119, Time's Up AR, as well as episode 145, Why Tone Policing Needs to Die in a Goddamn Dumpster Fire. Also, Will Veganism Solve Gun Violence, episode 126, and The Disruption of Kamala Harris, episode 186. Where can you find those, Paul?
TheBeardedVegans.com/start here.
So appropriate.
Very appropriate.
You know what else is appropriate, Paul?
What's that?
You saying the following 7 words.
We are The Bearded Vegans, signing off. And so we already had 2, the backfire effect and Do Vegans Need to Die to Create the Perfect Vegan Burger?
Do animals need to die? Now, Paul, for as evil as Nestle is, for all the human rights violations that they have committed, some might say, who cares what they do to humans because the animals have it way worse.
Is this a segue, Andy?
This is a fucking segue, Paul. This is a segue and a half, and I just thought of this. This was not premeditated.
Pop in Paul Blart Mall Cop because we're jumping on a segue.
Oh, man. So
I don't know if he rides segues in that movie, but I'm assuming that he does.
I think that he must. Okay. Paul Blart Mall Blart. So yeah, we want to have this discussion.